No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to all of us and affect our lives. Please call in if you have a question at 888-627-6008. And tonight we have a couple of guests. We have with us, hopefully, she's not on the line yet, but we hope to get her up, is Poet Taylor. Poet has a radio show on WPGC here in Washington, D.C. called Midday Shenanigans. God, I love the name of that show. It's 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. every day. That's a long show. And she serves as an ambassador to D.C.'s Department of Health, Sex Is campaign aimed at creating safe spaces for youth to discuss and learn about sexual health. And she also sits on the board of directors of Safe Shores DC, the child advocacy center that helps children and families affected by trauma and violence. And we hope to have her shortly. But until she comes on, let me tell you that I went to a festival on Friday outdoors that was for the Trigger Project. We hope also to have later in the show, we will have Tia Bell, who's been a guest in the past, talk about the Trigger Project. I won't tell you about too much about it now, except that it's aimed at stopping violence, gun violence here in the District of Columbia. And it's gotten crazy here in the District of Columbia. We have so many young people that are involved in gun violence, and we have to find ways to stem this. We've tried for years and years and years to get the guns off the streets. It's very hard because we don't control ultimately our own legal system. So we can't make our own laws without interference. And very often gun advocates in Congress keep us from making tough gun laws and try to overturn the laws we have. So it's been very hard to keep guns off the street in the district. We have some very good gun laws, but of course in Virginia and Maryland, the gun laws are not so tough. And so that's where all the illegal guns come from. And we know for a fact now that it's not a problem for kids to get their hands on guns. We see it over and over again. We've had a couple of really troubling incidents in the District of Columbia where we had a 14-year-old boy shoot an NFL running back. His name is Robinson. He plays for the Commanders. He's maybe the best running back the Commanders have. Luckily, he recovered from his wounds, but we had a 14-year-old boy shoot him. We've had another 14-year-old boy kill a 14-year-old on a metro platform. We currently have two 13-year-old girls and a 12-year-old girl on trial for murder for kicking a man to death in an alley and filming it just so they could put it on social media. It's just horrible. Now, that didn't involve a gun, but guns are only part of the problem. Obviously, violence is also a problem. So that's what we want to talk about tonight. If anybody's out there with an opinion, please call in. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to know what you think we can do to solve the problem. But I want to tell you that I was asked to be a speaker at the event the other night. And Unfortunately, Poet can't be with us tonight. I guess something came up with her. But so I will talk for a while until we get Tia Bell on the phone. But I want to talk about the Trigger Project and what I did in my speech on Friday was talk about an incident that happened with me. Unfortunately, I carried a gun when I was a young man. I was an orphan. I was kind of on my own in a lot of respects. I started working full time when I was 14. I was subject to some pretty awful crap, to be honest with you, when I was that young, working, wage theft, abuse, both physical and mental. And I carried a gun for a while. I thought, mistakenly, that the gun empowered me. But in fact, I found out later that it did not. I got into an altercation one night in the middle of an altercation in a bar in D.C. It really didn't involve me at first. It involved a friend of mine. And my friend got in an argument with someone who pulled out a gun and stuck it in his face. In an effort to defend him, I pulled out my gun. And as a result, we had the classic standoff. He had a gun pointed at my friend. I had a gun pointed at him. I think that this guy, who was a little older than I was, I think he was in his 30s, realized that he had a scared teenager in front of him with a gun. And it sobered him right up. He was drunk. It sobered him right up. And he looked at me and he said, "You put your gun away, and I'll put my gun away." So we did. Of course, as soon as I put my gun away, me and my friends ran out of the bar, ran down the street, got in our car, and came back. As fate came up Wisconsin Avenue back to where we were, where we lived. And as fate would have it, there was a red light close to the bar, and it turned, you know, the light turned red, and we were stopped pretty close to the front of the bar. By then, the owner of the bar, who had witnessed the whole incident, called the police, and the police were everywhere. They were arresting people. They were frisking people. They had the man that pulled the gun on my friend in handcuffs, and I was slumped down in the seat of the car with the gun shoved under the seat, and the owner of the bar looked over at me and seemed to recognize me just as the light turned green and my friend went, and we got away. The next morning, I got up and I started to think about this. I was very, very scared. And I started to think, what good would have come from my carrying a gun? What if I had shot this man? Would I have been able to live with that? What if he had shot me? Would he have ended my life? If I had shot him, would I have gone to jail for the rest of my life? If neither one of those things happened, and the bar owner had recognized me a few seconds sooner and informed the police, would I have been drugged out of the car where they found the illegal handgun? Would that have changed my life forever? I thought of 100 different scenarios, but I couldn't think of one scenario in which the gun became useful. I couldn't think of one scenario which had a good outcome with the use of the gun. And so as a consequence, I called up my friend, my best friend at the time, who shall remain nameless, and we went down to the Potomac River, broke the gun into several pieces, and threw it in the river. I have never, ever, ever, I'm 70 years old, that happened when I was 17, I've never, ever, ever touched a gun again. You might say, what was I doing in a bar at 17? Well, in D.C., you could drink in those days at 18 years old, and I had a fake ID. I think everybody had a fake ID in those days. But anyway, I was there. I was where I shouldn't have been with something I shouldn't have had in my hand. So at the time, when I look back at who I was at that time, I was a different person, weren't we all at 17? I was a high school dropout. I was an orphan. I had lots of crappy jobs, lots of minimum wage jobs. I was on a road to nowhere. I was getting arrested for little petty offenses that luckily were all expunged from my record when I was 18, because I never did anything violent or hurt anybody beyond that incident with the gun. And look at what happened to me. Because I didn't shoot somebody, because they didn't shoot me. I get back into school. I got a general equivalency diploma. I used that to get an associate of arts degree. I used that to get a bachelor's degree. I got a bachelor's degree. I went into graduate school. I got a master's degree. I started my own business on $800 loan from my sister and became a millionaire. I've been elected 3 times as a United States Senator from the District of Columbia. I've had a great, exciting, interesting life where I've always given back. I've always been a volunteer. I was a volunteer I was a block captain, and I'm the board of directors of my church, and I've led the community association here in Washington in my neighborhood for 10 years. I was president of my condo association. I've been elected 3 times. I've given back and given back and given back because I realized how lucky I was that a handful of people got involved and saved me from myself. And this is what we need to do, in my opinion. We need to intervene in the lives of these children and take the gun out of their hands and put a diploma in their hands, like people did with me. We need to take the gun out of their hands and give them a job. We need to take the gun out of their hands and give them a future. You know, when there is no hope, there's nothing. I quoted at the end of my speech a line from a famous book by Dante, The Inferno, where he writes above the gates of hell, "Let all who enter here give up all hope." And he does that because he understands that with no hope, there's nothing. And that's what we do with these children. We take away their hope. They see no future. And as a consequence, they resort to violence, and they also think that they should have a gun to protect themselves and empower themselves. And in fact, it makes them more vulnerable and less protected. And we need to find ways to get the guns out of their hand. And I was hoping tonight's show would be able to talk about that with poet. Evidently, she's not available. In about 15 minutes, we will ask T to come on the show. And right now I'd like to see if I could get Doug, who's our resident genius, to come on and share his opinion with me. Doug, what do you think?
Hi, Sandra Brown. Thank you for welcoming me. I appreciate that.
Well, you're always welcome. You know that. I mean, you know, when in doubt, go to Doug. That's printed right on the top of my computer screen. Yeah. So what do you think? I'm sure you have the same kind of problems there in Texas. And let me say right off the bat that I grew up around guns. I know it's not just about guns. And I defend people's Second Amendment right to own a gun. What I want to do is keep it out of the hands of crazy people and keep it out of the hands of kids. You know, that kid, I got to tell you, Doug, I want to know how you feel about this. The kid that shot the running back. Now, the running back is 6'2" and 240 pounds. You think, and in perfect physical shape. So much so that he recovered from the 2 gunshot wounds and still played that season. But you would think that a man like that would intimidate a 14-year-old. And when they interviewed a 14-year-old, he said all he could think about was getting a car. He couldn't think about the guy. He didn't think about the guy. He didn't think about the gun. All he cared about was trying to get the car. And that's a problem with kids, right? They can't see past the end of their nose. Am I right about that?
That's so true on so many levels, but even to the point of how we allow them to make decisions regarding even maybe their gender, because as a young person, they don't really have the awareness of themselves. you know, until a later age. And so when we train them on guns, let's example, or war, one of the things you might find interesting and maybe a little bit shocking, but I was never a history buff in school. And the reason I was never a history buff is because I can remember going to school and what I was being taught was that there was a lot of war and that the people that we should learn about were the people who led those wars. And that was your history, really. You know, war, conquerors, that's your history base. And I couldn't understand it for the life of me growing up why that was, even though it's important to know, don't get me wrong, but that was really the only real thing we were teaching. We weren't teaching the other side of the spectrum where, let's say, peace won out. It was more about the warfare and how history played out along those lines. So I think on many levels, what we put in a young mind, for example, guns, and we teach them to go out there and kill animals. I couldn't do it. I've never owned a gun. I think it's the wrong thing. Especially when they're young and they're already, you know, seeing guns around them, I think it's wrong. I believe that I believe in the Second Amendment right, but I don't think we're putting enough regulations or maybe rules in place, or we are really, how do you put it, discerning whether that person should have a gun or not. I mean, there are might be reasons why people should have guns, but it's just too open.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's got to be a balance there, and everybody wants to play a hard line there, but there's got to be a balance there.
That's true. Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt, but we can't talk to each other because we want to take all the guns away, or we want everybody to get any damn gun they want. You know, there's no room. I agree with that 100%. Both sides, there seems to be no room for compromise, you know, and that's just crazy. And let me just answer your question on why you were taught that. It's because the guys that win the wars write the history.
Right.
And that, you know, and they write it about themselves. Yeah, and you're right. What do we do? What, you know, you and I both know we've had Marianne Williamson on the show, and she's running for president. She doesn't stand a chance in hell of winning. But what does she talk about? She talks about peace and love and all these things that we should be embracing. I don't know why we don't embrace them. And you know what? The most interesting thing about her is that when she was a teenager, her father took her to Vietnam, so in the middle of the Vietnamese War.
Wow.
So she could experience firsthand what it was like to be in a war and how horrible it was, right?
Right.
And none of us have ever experienced that because since the Civil War, we have not had warfare in this country, you know? In Europe, they had it, and, you know, lots of other places, but not here. So
that sort of experience to take somebody over into another country to see another culture and what they see from their perspective is so enriching. Young minds don't get that opportunity enough. When I was young, I got to see East Germany and driving through and seeing these little, call them dog shacks, right?
Yeah.
Row after row after row of fencing and dog shacks, and everything with bullet holes in it and dreary looking, gray and dark, no real color. It was a shocking experience. And it changed me. So, everybody should travel a little bit, you know, and discover what other people think and how they live. And it really does open your mind. I mean, it allows you an awareness where you see that your opinion isn't always right. I mean, we see things through our own lenses, but that's because we don't have the experience of more lenses.
Yep. And you know what? That experience that you just explained, I'm sure that was very dramatic. And there are other places you can have that experience. Go to Arlington Cemetery. Stand in the middle of Arlington Cemetery. You know, Arlington Cemetery, I don't know if you've ever been there, but there's nothing but white headstones. They're all exactly the same. they're all exactly the same distance apart. And when you stand there and you just see headstone after headstone, as far as you can see in every direction, there's headstones. And you know, you start to understand what the cost of war is.
Yes.
And with connected to every one of those headstones, right, is not only the person that died, but his family, his children, his wife, his, you know, his friends,
right.
Everybody that passes on in this world leaves so much behind, and so many lives have been destroyed by that. And look what we're seeing right now. You know, we're seeing, right. seeing the, in Gaza, we're seeing all these people killed, and it's in retaliation for what they did to the Israelis,
right.
you know? And so there is no right side to this. There is no wrong side to it. Well, I understand why the Israelis are going after these guys the way they are. My God, 75 years ago, we tried to wipe every Jew off the face of the planet.
Right.
You know, and they feel that pressure. But still, women and children are being killed, and you know, and it's horrible. It's a horrible situation. And I ended my speech the other day by saying there's no good in a gun. And there is no good in a gun. It may be a necessary evil, but there's no good in it. No good in it. I don't believe.
I agree. And but we could take it far. There's really weapons in
yes.
general.
Yes.
I mean, it's not, you know, think 20 years from now or not, it's not going to be a gun. It's going to be a laser.
Yeah.
You know, maybe something worse. Maybe something, you know, that I can't think of right now. But if we're looking to invent things to hurt people, which we do, and we spend more money on that than anything else, in this country. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. To the same, I say to the same mind, but maybe they're saner than me. But your average person sees that and says, "What could we do with $1.5 trillion if it didn't go to
right.
war?"
Oh my God, what could we do? We could solve poverty. We could
right.
give jobs to people. We could make an economy that was the envy of the world.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
And you know, and there's people out there. I mean, let's face it. The gun manufacturers have a vested interest in selling guns. And the National Rifle Association might have started out as a gun safety group or something else, but now they're nothing more than a mouthpiece for the gun industry. They want
right.
more guns, and you know, and I think it's time for all of us to stand up and say we've sacrificed enough children, we've sacrificed enough people on the altar of your profit, right, to move on
right.
and ban these things. Yes,
maybe
like
we
assault
need
rifles.
Maybe we need to have a discussion on what we think humanity is really not just capable of, but who they are and how they really relate to each other. If we think, let's say that you're a powerful human being with lots of capital, and you think that society, if it didn't have law and order, it would be chaotic and they'd kill each other and it'd be, you know, everybody be fighting over the scraps, right? If you think that people are base and they just are never going to go anywhere without real you know, shepherds, then maybe you might think, okay, we need something there to corral them. But if you thought society, you know, without warfare could exist because nobody's going to come over and kill you for your plate of food, right, or for what you have, if humanity doesn't beggar his neighbor or desire what his neighbor has, if we're really actually living by good tenants and we can live together, then you would see that there's no need for that. But
yeah.
it, for some reason, we see that humanity is barbaric and they were liable to harm each other or hurt each other just because they envy another. And maybe that's why this is occurring. But I don't think that discussion about what is humanity really like, you know, really playing a part of the discussion. Because once we determine that, then we can determine how we deal with that.
Well, that's a really important point, I think. And, you know, we don't talk enough about who we are and how we should be. We talk about more what we think is. And, you know, fear is a great motivator, and it certainly is in politics forever. It's been used, and now we have a presidential candidate whose slogan is "I will be your retribution."
Right.
That's not a slogan; that's a threat.
Right.
And the horrible thing is half of America stands behind this man in that threat. So, and what does the other half do? The other half stands up and says, "No, you won't. No, you won't. We're gonna fight too." So,
it's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's time to, I think,
it's like a family. If you were close to a family member and it was total chaos, and you were fighting all the time, it would drive you insane. Well, society is a family. And we're driving each other insane. We couldn't do it. When I always want to see a solution, I always go from small to large or large to small. And I look at it in a perspective of something that I can manage in my head. And just like a country, you have a family. And if a family is constantly doing that internally, they can't, there nothing good comes from it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And look at what you accept from your family, because you love them, and you're connected. You have that connectedness that you're talking about, because there are people in your family that you fight with. I come from an Italian family, fighting is like part of every holiday celebration, but we still all get together. We still hug each other. It always made me laugh that if I had an elderly relative that died and all the people got together and the Italians are wonderful mourners and they all get together and they cry and they, and you're thinking to yourself, you never had a kind word for this person ever in the 80 years that he was on the planet. You never said one nice thing about him. And they're like, yeah, but he's my cousin, Right. Cause that connected makes all the difference in the world. Right. That you think this is something that we have to work out. This is not something we can turn our backs on. This is not something that will just go away. This is something that we have to work on. And that's it. If we could find a way to look at each other and say our humanity really lies not in ourselves, but in the group.
Right. Right.
We had this guy on a couple of weeks ago who I just thought was amazing. And he talked about how we've transferred our individuality into the group. And so now when you attack the group, you attack the person. So when I say something mean about Donald Trump, for example, all the Trump people take it personally. And when they say something mean about Joe Biden, I take it personally with all the other liberals in the world.
Right.
And, I think you're right. I think we have to get back to taking our, not only being, and we hide in the group, right? There's there's an anonymousness in, if that's a word, in the group. And that's one of the problems with social media, right? You can go on and not take responsibility for anything you say. Anything you say out there, you can do it anonymously. Half the people on it don't even use their real names. They use, they use nom de plumes. And so you don't have to take responsibility anymore. I think that's it. We got to get back to taking personal responsibility. And I think that's where you're heading.
Almost have to start with the idea that lies are the start of something bad.
Yeah.
And people today, it's just a nonstop liar's world. And that always troubles me, because I figure if you start there, if you can lie about things easy, and then you start to lie to yourself.
Yeah.
And those people can be easily caught up in, anger. And they don't let go because they don't want to look at themselves. When you lie and you do something wrong, and then it becomes easier and easier and easier. And it does, too. You've really got to, in the very beginning, say, no, I'm not that person. That won't occur, and be honest and forthright. But if you keep doing that, there's an anger that builds inside. And that gets let out and unleashed on the world. And then you really can't see the truth. And even if you troll the truth, you don't really care, and you'll stick with your lie. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right, and didn't we just see this? We just saw this in the trial that went on with the the former president, is that the first lie was the a court, you know, if you believe what happened and what the jury said, the first lie was the affair with the porn star. The second lie was trying to cover it up. The third lie was putting in false documents, right? And we've got, just to be honest and equitable, we've got the same thing going on with the president's son, right? The charges that he lied in order to get a gun permit. So you're right, the lies, and then you have to lie more to cover up the lie before, and you know, I hate to admit this on the air because you know, I'm a little embarrassed by it, but I would leave Mrs. Brown for Judge Judy. I love Judge Judy. You know, and she says all the time, if you don't lie, you don't have to worry about it. Just don't lie. Don't lie. Just tell the truth. And then you don't have to worry about what you're saying, and you don't have to think about it.
Right? I think that's a lie.
Yeah, you just have to come and tell the truth. Wait a second, Mrs. Brown is probably calling her divorce lawyer right now. Please don't, honey. I was only kidding. But you know what? I really love Judge Judy, and I think because she's so practical about what she says, you know, she's not giving you any legal opinion that you can't follow. She's saying things like, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining, you know, right? And there's so much truth in that. Will you try to get Tia on?
I'll bring her to us now. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of your discussion.
Oh, thank you. You make the show.
Oh, you're too kind, Senator. Thank you, sir.
While we're waiting for Tia to come on, let me just say, you know, it's so nice I'm so happy that we get to share our thoughts on the BBS radio platform. It's so easy to start a show with them, and I've had this show on for 11 years, and I've been with them the whole time, and I just want to thank Doug and Don and all the people at BBS Radio for what they do, because they make this possible. And you know what? I'm a very opinionated person, and I just would explode if I didn't have a way to express my opinions. You know, so thank you so much for giving me this forum and allowing me to do that. Were we able to get Tia?
Still trying to bring her in.
Okay, if we can't bring her in, then we'll just keep going. Maybe somebody should call in and tell us what you think. Love to hear from people. So anyway, let me tell you about Trigger, in case Tia doesn't come on. Trigger is a project where they're trying to get the guns out of kids' hands. And the idea is to reach down and try to figure out, instead of trying to block the guns from coming in, trying to keep the kids from wanting them. And the reason it resonated so much with me, this project, is because that's where I was. I was pushed into a corner with the gun in my hand, and the next morning when I realized it was no good on the gun for me, I threw it out. So that's what we have to teach kids. There's no good in the gun. There's nothing you can do. The school to prison pipeline is a real thing, and you don't want to be in it. You want to put that gun down. You want to have something in the future. But part of what Trigger is about is Trigger stands for True Reasons I Grabbed the Gun Evolved from Risk. A lot of children feel they're at risk, and they need these things to protect themselves. Maybe we can get Doug back on if we can't get Tia, because people are tired of listening to me.
Oh, no, they aren't. Yeah, we tried Tia. We couldn't reach her, and then a glitch happened really quickly.
Okay, let's move on a little bit and say that, you know, I think this is a problem that we all have to embrace and we have to look at. And, you know, it's gotten so horrible. Doug, I don't know if you listened earlier, but, you know, we have two 13-year-old girls and a 12-year-old girl who had been charged with second-degree murder. And they kicked a homeless man to death, and they recorded it one of them on their cell phone so that they could play it on social media. I mean, how horrible is this?
It's almost something I can't even comprehend, to be
honest. Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? You couldn't write this stuff. You couldn't make it up because people wouldn't believe it. You know, and it's just gotten, and it's gotten worse during the pandemic. You know, when people, the most dangerous person on the street is somebody that feels that they have nothing to lose. Right. They have nothing to lose. And some of these kids feel that way.
Yes.
The juvenile justice system might treat them better than they're treated at home. Right. And we have to do that. And you're right. It's such a complex problem, too. It gets down to teenagers having children that they're not prepared to raise. It gets down to a society that's indifferent to poverty and homelessness and all the other ills that industrialization and has brought forth in modern society. You know, we think that there's an upside and a downside to everything. And there's an upside and a downside to democracy. There's an upside and a downside to capitalism. There's an upside and a downside to all of this. And if we embrace it without consideration, then you get both, right?
Boy, you're so right. And that's why a roundtable discussion with lots of point of view is so important, because,
yes,
somebody else on the table will see it totally different, even though we see it as a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
And you got to have compassion for that, and at least willing to listen to that.
Yeah.
And in today's world, there's so much crazy, and there's so much chaos, and our ears are closing down, our eyes are shutting. It's almost like you could walk by a man getting beaten to death right in front of you and walk by. Why? Because either fear or indifference or something. And you see a lot of that today. It's very few people that would want to stand up and get in harm's way to save another human being.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Unfortunately. And, you know, I grew up, and you probably grew up with the same thing, surrounded by stand-up people.
Right.
Stand-up people. Mm-hmm. My mother considered herself a universal mother. That was her. She had a job. She had a family. But she considered herself to be a mother. That was her identity. So if she went out in the world and she saw a kid that was in distress for any reason, she intervened. She didn't, you know, she didn't walk by. She saw a child that was in trouble. She would stop and do what she could to help that child. I don't know if we do that anymore. I don't know if we care enough anymore. And it's horrible. And you know what? I think we're getting more detached, Doug.
Yes.
I just stood at a polling place giving out literature for a candidate that I wanted to see elected. And I can't tell you how many young people walked by me with those plugs in their ears, listening to what, you know what,
sure.
If you really have to listen to music, and I'm not against that. I love it. But don't come out into public and do it. You know, when you're in public, interact with the people that are around you.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a little boy, my grandmother would not let me sit down on a bus if there was a woman standing up. And I've got to tell you that I used to go up to women all the time when I was like 5 or 6 years old. I remember this experience because it embarrassed me. And I would tug on their skirt and I would say to them, would you like to have my seat? And they always said the same thing, Doug. They would look at me and say, oh, that's so kind of you, honey, but no, thank you. To which I would have to say, you don't understand. I can't go back. So you have two choices here. Because if I go back, that old woman's going to push me back. If I say she doesn't want the seat, she's going to push me back in the aisle and go convince her. So you got two choices.
Right.
You got two choices here, lady. You can go sit down or you can stand next to me and feel guilty,
sure.
You know, because I'm not going back.
Sure.
And, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been on metros and I see pregnant women standing up.
Right.
And men sitting down that won't offer their seats.
Right.
And, you know, and I learned very early on, there is no such thing as a small kindness. Because when you walk through a door and you hold the door open for the person behind you, what it requires of you is for you to look at that person and take what they're doing into consideration.
Right.
They're carrying a package. They're a woman. There's somebody that needs to go through the door. You know, you have to get outside yourself, even if it's just for an instant, to consider them as a person.
Right. We don't teach the rewards in giving.
Yes.
You know, when you do that, when you find that the joy that people, oh, one moment, please excuse me.
Yeah. Maybe she is calling in. That would be great. Be great to have her on the show and talk a few minutes about what Trigger does. She's an amazing human being, former North Carolina basketball star player. Just amazing. Or maybe we have a caller calling in with an idea. Be great to have anybody.
We have Tia with us.
Oh, great. Tia.
Hey,
Tia Bell. Thanks for being on the show. Look, I've been trying to tell people about Trigger because I find it such an incredible project. First, and I'll ask you to explain it, but first let me just tell you a little bit about Tia Bell. Tia Bell is this person who is just her kindness, she just exudes kindness, right? And everybody, to know her really is to know her is to love her. Because what she's out there trying to do is just make the world a better place for all of us. So talk for a minute about Trigger, will you? I've already told them how important you are and your basketball credentials and everything else. But please tell us something about Trigger. What is it? Yeah. What do you hope to do?
Yeah, so Trigger is my heart child. It's hard to call her the brain child. But it is an organization bringing compassion and comprehensive understanding to gun violence prevention. And Trigger actually stands for True Reasons I Grabbed the Gun, Evolve from Risk. And we like to say we're the intersection where public health meets positive youth development.
So that's what we need to do, right? We need to remove the risk. We need to remove the idea that these young people have in their heads, which is very real, that there's no future for them, and they need to protect themselves. And tell us about your experience, Tia. I know you have personal experience with gun violence.
Yeah, well, you called me one of the kindest people, and so I was just born with a really big heart, and I truly believe, Senator, that my experience started when I was born. You know, there are things that we're exposed to that indirectly influence us, and that thing was gun violence. When I was born in D.C., my hometown, Howard University Hospital in 1989, we were the murder capital. And so 10 years after that, my mother almost fell victim, being shot twice in broad daylight when I was only 10 years old. And then right after that, just remembering that my friends beside me, being a tomboy growing up uptown, hanging with a lot of guys, it just started dropping, and it never stopped. And so I got to a point where it became abnormal, because it is culturally normal to Native Washingtonians and people who've been here for a long time. You just sort of hear about it and you say, oh, you know, or you hear about it, you go to the vigil, the funeral, and then you go back. And it became abnormal for me when I turned 17 and lost my Uncle Doug, who was my mom's younger brother. So the disease of gun violence was, you know, impacting our family twice, and directly and devastatingly, you know. So in college at NC State, I thought basketball was going to be my vehicle, you know, being playing on a full ride, being Gatorade Player of the Year, having this promising career. And then I faced three life-changing knee surgeries, reconstructive knee surgeries that led me to getting my master's in youth development. And so I went from experiencing gun violence directly and being around it every day to just hearing about it in North Carolina. So I believe my capacity grew greater, and my vision for just a more healthy and safer city really started to blossom. And so gun violence is still impacting me. I'm losing young men and women that I love and serve on both sides of the gun. And they're, you know, they're on the cusp of desperation, and we're trying to protect them with as many alternatives as possible. But, you know, our city is really behind in terms of supporting our youth and understanding them. And we're first in leading, you know, this cause and blaming them.
Well, yeah, that's because we're all so damn important in Washington, right? That we don't have time for our children. We have, you know, we're all worried about, people can tell you more, but I say this all the time, people of power in this city who could make a difference could tell you more about Hillary Clinton than it can about Muriel Bowser, you know, and the government in our city doesn't put any money into this because, or enough money into it. They do put some money into it, but they don't put enough money into it because we don't put enough pressure on them to do that, and we absolutely need to do it. And if you don't mind me saying this, as much as I would have loved to see you play in the WNBA, I think that God has put you exactly where he wants you, Tia, because I've seen you in action, and you are amazing. You really are. You're amazing.
Senator, listen, it feels like Friday was a game seven, okay? My body is still tired.
I know.
We played hard and we played together, but no, I created the festival 4 years ago because I realized, you know, being a former athlete, you craft your game. You know, you become a student of your game. And so when I was becoming a student of gun violence prevention, I just noticed people weren't working together, and although I'm 6'4", I had a very point guard-like style, and so I just always have included everybody, and I do believe God has designed me to do this, and, you know, it was devastating to have those three knee injuries actually on my left leg, which is the same leg my mother was shot in, and which is the same leg Sean Taylor lost his life to, and so, you know, it's all been very, very symbolic. And, you know, I heard one of the speakers say this, that they turned their pain into purpose. And I'm just grateful I had the protection around me, myself, because I was exposed to these same risks that I see our youth fighting, you know. But I just had that pastor, that teacher, even drug dealers would not let me, you know, do things that maybe other kids could get away with, or even my friends. So
yeah,
I've always just been protected and seen, and so that's why I think I can pour out of my cup, because it's really, you know, our babies, our youth are burning the village down to feel its warmth. And so, you know, just trying to educate people from a public health and youth development stance, we have more of a long-term chance, you know, when we invest in our babies now. Yeah.
Well, that's absolutely the truth, and I'm sure that's one of the reasons you get back. I know it's the reason I volunteered my whole life since I've been an adult for different things, and that's why I do it, because, you know, I don't know if you remember the story I told about me carrying a gun when I was a kid, but I threw my life away at 15 years old, and there were people that stepped in and saved me. I went from being a high school dropout to graduating at the top of my class with a master's degree. I went from having minimum wage jobs to becoming a millionaire in a business that I started on an $800 loan. And, you know, I did that because there were people around me that loved me and supported me. You know, I was broke growing up my whole life, but I never I came from North New Jersey, which was a horrible environment, to Montgomery County. And when I grew up and I look back, I said, thank God I was in Montgomery County when all this happened.
Yes.
Thank God I was a white kid, and there were a bunch of neighbors that rushed in to help me, and our older sister that wouldn't let me fail. And, you know, so I've always felt
your protection.
Right. I've always felt an obligation to give back.
We've had the privilege.
Yes.
We've had the privilege of being protected, and that's why, you know, the people who make it and transform, because we heard from, men who had served time for murder and were up there at the festival talking about change, you know, so we know that transformation is possible from your light to theirs. And that's what I love that you shared. You were so brilliant and brave in your delivery on Friday, and I really appreciate your grace, because people think that gun violence, interpersonal gun violence, is a black thing, you know, but really gun violence is spread economically. It's a social economic disease, you know. It's communicable disease. So you really touched my heart up there, because it's not easy to do. Everybody that grabbed the microphone at that festival really did what they did for someone else listening, you know? And so that, it's contagious. That positivity is contagious, just like shooting could be contagious to solve an issue. So that's really the intent of the day, to come together, you know, and spread prevention, spread possibility of that.
Well, and you know what? I shared that story because it's so important, I think, to do that, as you just said. I've never talked about it publicly because I've run for political office 5 times, and I never thought it was a good thing to say, oh, yeah, I used to carry an illegal handgun when I was a kid. So I never talked about it publicly. The only people that knew about it were my family and very close friends. But then I decided this is such a problem. None of us can hold back. We all have to be part of the solution. And given that, that we're running out of time, and because Trigger is such an important project, tell our listeners how they can send you a contribution or find out what you're doing. Give them your website and go ahead.
Yes, so you guys can stay connected with us and spread prevention. We are www.thetriggerproject.org and on all social media outlets at The Trigger Project DC.
Okay, well, thank you for being on the show, Tia. Once again, I know you're at the beach trying to relax a little after all that you've done. And, you know, eat some Thrasher's French fries for me. Have a good time. And thanks again for being on the show. Thanks to everybody for listening. We leave you with the song dedicated. This goes out to Tia Bell and all the people at Trigger. I don't know what other song to play than Marvin Gaye, What's Going On. Thanks, folks.
What's going on? Bless you, Senator. We are prevention.
Yes, you are. God bless you. Thanks, Doug.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way.
Representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.